Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Veterans ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome back to CBS Eye on Veterans. I'm Navy vet Phil Briggs and journalist reporting for the military and veteran news website, ConnectingVets.com. Today, we're talking about how veterans are making a huge difference and the incredibly dramatic story unfolding even as we speak in the violent and flat-out deadly streets of Haiti. The group is called Project Dynamo, and it's led by Army and Navy Special Operations veteran Brian Stern, who, over the last several years, has conducted successful rescue operations in many of the most dangerous and war-torn nations around the world. Recently, Brian Stern and his operations team rescued Florida missionaries from an extremely remote and hazardous area in Haiti. So joining us to tell the story is Army and Navy veteran Brian Stern. Brian, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
To say that, you know, you do some of the unthinkable is probably an understatement. But tell me a little bit about where you guys have been before we jump into the Haiti story right now. Just kind of the work that you've done over the years.
So started off life in the Army, found my way into the Navy. The bulk of my career has been in on the special operations side of the intelligence side of the house. I've worked in about 70 countries, give or take, all kinds of cool units that we don't talk about, different places that we don't talk about. I was a 9/11 first responder and been pretty much deployed since about noon on 9/11, one way or the other. Fast forward about 20 years later to August 2021, during the failed withdrawal of Afghanistan, trying to figure out what to do. I was done with the government. I was in the private sector doing my own thing and saw it on TV, knew that we could do a lot of work, knew that we could do, we know how to do these things, saw that it wasn't going very well, recognized that clearly people would be left behind, which fast forward they were. The hearings are going on today as we speak about the failed withdrawal of Afghanistan, General McKinsey and General Milley. I got some guys together. We packed our stuff. And what makes Dynamo different than a lot of other organizations is that we go forward. We're on the street. We buy one-way tickets. That's kind of our thing, where our motto is don't be a spectator. So we packed our stuff, went to while the whole world was looking at Kabul, we kind of focused our attention in the north where less people were paying attention, honestly. There were lots of military guys and men and women in the Air Force, the Marine Corps, and special operations folks in Kabul running around. But we were told that they were going to be leaving. And the big question was, what do all these people do after they leave? Because anybody can get somebody to a Marine at the gate, do a challenge and password, and then get them on an Air Force C-17. But once that Marine leaves and once that C-17 leaves, well, then what do you do? Because at that point, the Taliban is going to control the DMV. So We recognized that, built some infrastructure on the ground, both in the north and in the south, and continued operating there even to this day. We're still pulling Americans out of Afghanistan in March 2024. Still.
Wow.
3 years later, people are still in hiding. There's no embassy. There's no way out. To the east is Pakistan. To the west is Iran. Generally speaking, not great places. So from Afghanistan, we expanded into Ukraine. We got to Ukraine almost 2 months before the first shot was fired. Built infrastructure on the ground in Ukraine. The war started. We were there day one. We did the first rescue of Americans within the first hour of missiles landing on the first day of the war. We continue operations there also to this day. In Ukraine, we've done everything from buses from denied areas to breaking people out of jail from Russian captivity. The first American victim of war crimes alive since World War II, we broke out of jail. The second American victim of war crimes alive since World War II, we also broke out of jail. And the third American victim of war crimes since World War II, we also broke out of jail. So in separate operations, Detroit Lions, Rio Grande, and an operation called Twin Cities. So from there, we went into Russia proper and did an operation called Pathfinder, November 2022. And we're Dynamo's credited with the first kinetic operation inside of Russia to rescue Americans in Russian or American history. From there, we went to Sudan. The U.S. Embassy evacuated, left behind 16,000 American citizens to fend for themselves. 29 countries land airplanes. The United States is not one of them. We were the only thing flying for the longest time to rescue American citizens. So we rescued people from Sudan. Somewhere in there, we did Hurricane Ian. We were first in the water during the hurricane. We beat Florida Fish and Wildlife. We beat the Florida State Police. We beat the United States Coast Guard. We had done our third or fourth operation when they were first getting in the water. So again, you know, Americans in trouble where the government is not present for one reason or the other. We're not political. We don't really care about why they're in trouble, just that Americans are in trouble. And then we go to Maui. We project force from Tampa, Florida onto Maui during the fires, and Dynamo conducts 2,400% more operations than the entire Department of Defense combined. So we projected force from Tampa onto the island, yet again, flying helicopters, got on the ground, doing our thing. U.S. military was 17 minutes away and couldn't figure out how to go from Hawaii to Hawaii. So that's a problem. Israel happens. October 7th happens. We were in Israel the next night. It took us some time to get there. We got boots on ground in Israel, started doing operations in Israel and in Gaza. In Afghanistan, in September 2021, we held the record for the largest private rescue of American citizens. That was 117 people. In October 2023, out of Israel, we did 273 American citizens from a war zone. Subsequent to that, we rescued five American citizens from Gaza. In January 2024, just a few weeks ago. And that brings us to Haiti. And here we are. All in, in the last 2.5 years, we've conducted 610 missions, and that turns into just about 7,000 people. We're just under 7,000 people at this time. Another way to think about it is that if you took every SEAL team that ever existed from 1962 to present day, rescues of American citizens from bad places, we have the numbers by about triple. Another way to think about it.
Sort of like the private sector 911 operating in the gray space. I've talked to other individuals, you know, some really noteworthy vets that I got so much respect for, like Tim Kennedy and others, you know, about this lane, about this gray area between, you know, U.S. government and what a Project Dynamo can do. It's amazing to think we have a gray space out there like this. And before we again get to this most recent event in Haiti, why, in your estimation, is it that you're able to do this when the DOD can't? Is this just because of initiative, or is it also a unique combination of veterans with this task force special missions unit backgrounds like you guys all have?
I would say there's nothing that Dynamo does that the U.S. government can't do. There's no I didn't invent any of these tactics. I didn't invent any of this stuff. This is old school. The Jedbergs and the OSS in World War II, which is kind of our model, is, you know, two-man teams, four-man teams, real small elements would get parachuted behind enemy lines with a .45, a pocket knife, and a bag of cash and a code book. And their job was to, you know, build networks, make them our friends, find Germans and kill them. That's kind of our model, except it's find Americans or rescue them. But it's kind of the same idea. Dynamo is different because we're on the ground. A lot of groups will go in Ukraine. A lot of different veteran groups went to Ukraine, but they went to Lviv mostly. They kind of stayed where it was safe. We work in the occupied areas surrounded by bad guys. So for perspective, if you're working in Lviv, like many groups do, and that's great, by comparison, that's like if you're in New York and the war is in California. It's that far away. So Ukraine, from the border, from the front lines to Lviv is 31 hours away by car. So if you're in Lviv, so it's important to understand that we work on the front lines and beyond. We're not a coordinating element. We don't know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. Of the 610 missions that we've done, I've personally led on the street over 580 of them, personally with my team. That's part of the secret sauce, is that we're not, you know, there's lots of great groups out there that support rescues, that facilitate rescues, that do a lot of things. A lot of group, there's a group out there, and I won't mention their name, but they say we've rescued 15,000 people from Ukraine. Well, what that really means is when you peel it back a little bit, what that is if you get to Lviv, they'll get you to Poland. When I'm in Lviv and I need to get to Poland, I take an Uber. That's how I do it. So Warzone Uber is now what we are. And, you know, as far as, you know, why are we here? I wish I had a good answer. I don't know why. I've been doing this for my entire life. I joined in the late 90s. I've done this for the in and out of uniform for the government for many, many, many years. We are incredibly capable. Everywhere that I've worked as Dynamo, generally speaking, as far as regions go, I've also worked for the government. And I can tell you with the utmost certainty that if the government wanted to, they can clean my clock pretty easily. But our entire operating budget is like the same as lug nut grease in the CENTCOM motor pool. The State Department American Consular Services has an unclassified budget of $63 billion a year. We're not even a rounding error for that. So as far as, you know, when you have a $63 billion a year budget, you don't have budget problems. You don't have capability problems. You don't have resource problems. Having said all that, there are lots of reasons. Some of them are easy to understand. Some of them are hard to understand as to why the government chooses, and it's a choice, to do or not do different things like rescue Americans. That brings us to Haiti. There's lots of reasons why there might be some reticence. Some of those are political. Some of those are tactical. Some of those are perception. Some of those are policy. Some of those are personnel. You know, there's lots of really great people who work for the government. There's also lots of not so smart people that work for the government. And sometimes those not so smart people are in charge. And they're the ones that have to make some tough decisions. And if they don't have the cerebral attitude or the testicular fortitude to make the right decisions, well, then the right decisions don't get made. Or at some point they do, but very often it's a ways away. And when you're dealing with American lives, like anything else, when seconds count, days are a lifetime. And we're dealing with that right now in Haiti. A lot of left hand and right hand not talking to each other. Frustrating, knowing that we have significant capability, and that if a choice was made, that Dynamo could go home. We're a donor funded nonprofit. We don't get commission for people who we don't charge people money. So there's no incentive. We work where the government isn't. If State Department got on TV right now and said we're sending 500 helicopters, 10 C-17s, and whatever, and we're going to be doing helo operations out of Port-au-Prince, I'd order my crew to stand down. We go home and wait for the next crisis. We're not in competition with the government. We can't compete. We're in lieu of.
And that's the frustrating part. I'm glad to hear that you kind of mentioned that, going all the way back to the comparison to the old school OSS. My brother and my stepfather, both career Langley men, and so much respect for what that side of the intelligence community does. It has to do it with skilled professionals, whom even like yourself, you've served alongside and served on, you know, some of those missions in that gray space. But it is a damn frustrating fact to think our own government can't or won't have the agility to act and move when Americans are truly, truly in crisis. I understand. It's a tough decision to make, but I wish there was more veterans serving in the nerve center of the government like yourself that could see how capable we are at doing these, you know, when it hits the fan. And it most recently did in Haiti, which brings us to, you know, this recent rescue to find Florida missionaries down there. Several, as a matter of fact, doing God's work. Can you describe sort of the situation that they met and how they got, you know, to need your services and then how the call came in?
So here in Haiti, the entire world is looking at Port-au-Prince. It's kind of like Afghanistan. The whole world is looking at, was looking at Kabul, right? That's all the imagery was Kabul. The reality is there are Americans in Afghanistan all over the country, east, west, north, south, in the middle, all over the place. What you see in the missionary world is very much the same thing. There are lots of people that are in the population centers, and then there's lots of people who are out in the hinterlands. So while everyone is focused right now on Port-au-Prince, these missionaries were literally farther than a plane could fly, all the way out in the middle of nowhere. So even if the government was going to start doing things in Port-au-Prince, these particular folks would be last on the list because of where they were. They were really in an extremely austere environment. And God bless them because they're doing missionary work in the middle of nowhere where the local Haitians probably need it the most, right? That's where missionaries like to go. And that's fine. But the reality is they were closer to Cuba than they were to Port-au-Prince. They were basically on the western tip of the entire island of Hispaniola, which is Haiti and Dominican Republic. So it's kind of our thing. Our kind of genre, if you will, are hard cases. If you're in a good spot, generally speaking, we don't tend to go to those places. We tend to do the things that are hard, where people are forgotten about, where things are just a little more challenging. That tends to be where our claws really come out and where we start to drool a little bit and get excited over operations. So the airfield that we use didn't even have electricity. So this is real austere, really rural, middle of nowhere. You know, get chopped up by a bunch of voodoo guys and nobody would ever find you. I mean, real, real, real sparse.
What were they experiencing around them? I know that the government kind of has fallen or, you know, devolved. Gangs and warlords are simply taking over territories and operating as they want. What were they experiencing?
It's complicated. You know, the government of Haiti hasn't completely collapsed, but it's also not completely functional either. So, when the state, you know, I agree with the State Department. When the State Department says it's time to go a month ago, the reality is there was no way for them to get out between them and the closest thing that looks like an airplane, 50, 60 hours through the jungle and gangland with God only knows what. So there was no effective way out for them. The airports are closed. The airspace is closed. No one's coming. Embassy says don't come here. And Haiti as a government is certainly not safe, especially for Americans. You need to remember the number one revenue stream for gangs in the country of Haiti is kidnapping. And Americans are the most valuable. Every American citizen here is a lottery ticket. You know, as we sit and breathe today in March 2024, there are more American citizens in captivity being held hostage and unlawful detention today than the last 44 years. So,
wow. Can you paint a little bit of a picture about the tactical side of the operation to get to them? You said you had to drive through jungles. Were they hunkered down in a church? Were they hunkered down in a school building? Like, what did you see and how did you extract them? And then also build on that to the back end. I know once you find the target, well, then there's exfil, and that can be just as dangerous as getting to the location. Talk to me kind of about how the op went down.
Yeah, we flew. They were able to get to an airstrip that we had access to in Haiti. We flew in. We flew on a fixed wing airplane. Flew real low. We didn't go above 400 feet, 500 feet off the ocean, off the sea. And the idea was we don't want anyone to know that we're coming. Not that we're breaking laws or anything, but the laws here are at best flexible. The Haitian military and army are complicated and their loyalties can be questionable sometimes. It's always better for people to find out after the fact, not before you're coming, no matter what the circumstances are, even in friendly places. So we flew in, got them on planes. We had to find gas, which is a real problem, finding airplane gas. They were really, 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 really far away. So finding fuel became a problem. Came out also by air, landed at another airstrip. From there, we switched to a boat, took a boat to another spot, stayed there for a little bit, ate food, kind of got our bearings and everything, and then took a bus, went by land from our midpoint to Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, another city.
And to coordinate all this, just in our closing minutes here, are you guys capable of finding boatsmen, airmen, you know, land navigation, drivers, cars, buses, trucks? Are you guys able to do that because of your backgrounds? I mean, I take it all the veterans on your team have some special missions unit or have worked, you know, for some special operations. How do you go about coordinating and finding all the helpers that are going to help you coordinate logistics once you get wheels on ground?
We build our own networks. So, you know, we build our own, we make our own friends. We develop our own networks, and it's one of the reasons why it works is because we're on the ground. So again, to compare it to a lot of other groups, a lot of groups who are in the, you know, quote unquote rescue game, you know, veteran groups that do rescues, they'll call somebody and say, you know, my good friend Philip is stuck in Haiti. What I need is I need this and I need that and I need the other thing. And, you know, we need to do this for him. We need to do this for him and we need to do this for him. When Dynamo does it, it's we need it because we're part of the package. We are incredibly incentivized to make the turkey fly because we're stuck on the ground too, everywhere we worked. So, you know, I have an Afghan visa in my passport as I talk to you right now. I go to, we go to Afghanistan and walk the streets and are on the streets and do the thing with surrounded by the Taliban and all kinds of other problems. So I don't know an Afghan who is going to lend me his house. Every safe house that we maintain, I've personally used the plumbing in myself. And that's why it works. That's why it works. And that's what's different about Dynamo. And we do it on a shoestring budget using only donations, and we don't have any major endowments or foundations, or, you know, we're not sponsored by American Airlines or you know, the Koch brothers or what have you. I wish we were. We have to, you know, our average donation size is just about $200. When I get frustrated, you know, when I get frustrated, which happens, everything we do is difficult. Every time we're in the field, we have a joke. It's, you know, we're almost there, or, you know, tomorrow. During Operation Detroit Lions, I worked on him for 37 days. Every single day, it was supposed to be the next day that we got him for 37 days. And he's being tortured to death. And his mom came out to Poland. They're from Detroit. That's what we call the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, and, good.
Right. And for 37 days, I had to tell his mom, tomorrow's the day. You know, I we're looking good. We're almost there. We're almost there. We're almost there. And the name of the game is don't give up until there's no more need. It is frustrating. So when I get frustrated, which happens, it's the nature of this stuff. And you can very quickly fall into the trap of getting angry at the government and all the things and all the bad things that go with that. I invariably will get an email from someone who we evacuated, and more often than not, a donor who says, thank you. Our donors don't give to us because we're military. They don't give to us because I'm a male or a Democrat or a Republican or gay, straight, or I don't know if I'm gay or straight, if I'm black, white, or purple, if I'm Muslim, Christian, Jewish. They give to us because we're Americans doing what Americans have always done, which is just show up. My crew are made up of black, white, purple, Muslim, Christian, Jews, old, fat, young, skinny, hairy, bald. We got a veteran, non-veteran, male, female. And it's a real testament to the greatness of America, because this is what really, this, you know, all of our differences are what they are. and that's okay. But when push comes to shove, you have an American passport. There's a contract in very small print on page two that says, if you got a passport that looks like this, you will be safe, and be very careful.
Yeah, doing God's work here, helping missionaries who were there to do God's work. It's a beautiful combination, and I love the patchwork quilt of the members of Project Dynamo, your various backgrounds, and the service that you guys have all given to the country already. Last question I guess I wanted to fit in is just, I can imagine this gets kinetic, especially when you're breaking people out of jails in Ukraine, or, you know, when you're behind enemy lines. Did this mission get kinetic at any time?
No, and generally speaking, it's not kinetic, actually. It's more like a magic trick. It's, you know, David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear in front of 3,000 people. Probably he didn't actually make the Statue of Liberty disappear, but there's 3,000 people that saw it with their own eyes. Well, that's very often what these things look like. You know, because of where we work, I get asked this question all the time. In Ukraine, what kind of gun do you carry? Because I want to carry the same gun that you carry, you know, all that stuff. And I tell people I work unarmed. And they go, well, how could that be? And I go, well, when you work 31 hours away from the closest thing that looks like a friend, if I got into a gunfight, I would need a dump truck of ammo behind me just to survive. Because 31 hours in a running gun battle in a two-man or three-man crew against half the Russian army, with no air support, no drones, no artillery, no tanks, no QRF, no nine lines, no medevac, none of those things, we wouldn't survive that gunfight. So we're much more about sleight of hand and ruse and tradecraft and deception and manipulation and all the other things that go into these kinds of operations, because we operate completely unsupported, right? It's Afghanistan, even in my career. In my career, Afghanistan was always the easiest place I worked by far, because if you're in a SEAL team and you hit a house in Afghanistan and it doesn't go well, and you expected two bad guys, but it turns out there's 50 bad guys, you're dramatically underestimated, and it doesn't go well, and you push a button, more SEALs show up. And if that doesn't work, Rangers and the Marine Corps shows up. And if that doesn't work, drones and F-16s and all kinds of things show up. Well, that's different in places where you don't have any of those resources. So, you know, it's part of the challenge that we have, is that there's a lot of really great vets out there that have had tremendous, 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 wonderful, heroic acts of greatness over the last 20 years of the global war on terrorism. But if you got 10 deployments to Afghanistan, and that's your experience, generally speaking, that skill set is not always applicable on this side of the fence, right? It's no different than being a journalist. There was a time, right? You know, as a journalist, if I took away your laptop, your internet, your Wi-Fi, your headphones, and your ability to do research, most journalists would struggle. And if I told you to keep performing, right? Most journalists have never seen a typewriter in 2024. Most journalists haven't been to a library, right? So you could be the most amazing journalist in the world, but if you're used to having a laptop and a cell phone and Wi-Fi to do your craft, and I take those things away, well, you're going to struggle as far as your effectiveness goes. This sort of thing is the exact same way, is if you're used to having a lot of resources and all the things that all the cool toys that we have, and you strip all those toys away, it can be a real struggle to be combat effective. Most of my crew are used to, or at least good at, doing operations without a lot of support, where we got to do it ourselves. We don't have a building of analysts to read through intelligence reports and give us data dumps about where the bad guys are. I wish we did. We don't have that kind of capability. So we do it the old fashioned way. And it's a much different way of doing it. Like the OSS in World War II and Jedburghs and Czechoslovakia and France and all those places where they had to do it themselves. That's much more our style.
So cool. So cool. Which is why I love those operators that work in that gray space between military intelligence, and the DOD, being able to do it that way. And, thank you for the comparison to journalism too. I'm proud to be a Defense Information School graduate. First and foremost, I can get the story with just a pen and a post-it. But the work you do far more impressive. Absolutely doing God's work out there. Thank you very much for recanting the story of this rescue in Haiti, the Florida missionaries. More to come. I know the job isn't done. You guys going to stay there. You're going to press on, continue to do more things. And I know when the call goes up, no matter where in the world, you guys are ready to respond. How can we respond to you? How can people help support Project Dynamo?
Go to the website, projectdynamo.org, and there's a big button there that says donate. Push the button. Every dollar goes to an operation. We need these things are expensive. Helicopters do not fly themselves. Airplanes do not fly themselves. Boats don't sail themselves. I'm not independently wealthy. I wish I were. I don't have my own helicopter. I wish I did. I don't have my own boat. Really wish I did. These things do cost money. We don't mind doing the work. We love doing the work, but we need financial support. And until we figure out a way for the government to reimburse us a little bit, which is never going to happen, we rely on the generosity of American donors who give. We have donors that give a dollar a month, and that is helpful.
In an uncertain world, it's certain you can count on Project Dynamo. Veterans standing up, doing great things, continuing their service. And I just can't thank you enough for sharing this story. And you know what? Sometime I want to turn this mic off. I want to meet you down at your home, down there, wherever you are. Kick back and have a beer around the campfire and hear some really incredible stories. But to see them play out in the news and know that there's a success at the end of a Project Dynamo mission, that's what counts. Support Project Dynamo if you can. And dude, be safe out there, Brian. I know you will. I know you got the tradecraft skills to get in and out, but and keep it safe while you're on the ground, sir.
Great. Thanks so much, Phil. Appreciate you.
Roger that.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Veterans ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on the 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.